I'm Sarah Nadler, award-winning author and founder of the B Movement, a group coaching program for small business owners like you who are looking for answers to life, love, and business. I spent 10 years as a traveling minister, seeing the world and meeting people from all walks of life, from the poorest streets of Mexico to the advertising world of Los Angeles. The B Movement podcast is just one of the ways I get to share with you all that I've learned on this journey of life. Thanks for being here, and if you like my content, please subscribe and check out my website at thebmovement.net. Hey there, guys. Sarah Nadler here. Welcome back. This is day 4 of the challenge. I am super excited because we have a very special guest speaker coming this time who I'd love to introduce to you guys in just a minute. But for anybody who has just joined in today and you've missed the last couple days of the challenge, I want to cover a little bit what you're going to find when you jump over into the unit section and watch those replays. Day 1, we went over failure patterns. These are the habits you've gotten into in your business, the things that maybe are holding you back from actually accomplishing what you want to accomplish in 2021. So don't miss the day 1 recap. Day 2, we invited special guest Ben Nadler, who is very near and dear to my heart, and we covered cash flow, what to do if your business is seasonal, or if there's times of the year when you kind of struggle to pay the bills a little bit more than other months. Day 3, I dove really deeply into income planning and how to actually make your income predictable in your business. And today, I'm very excited because this is day 4. We're going to focus on disaster preparedness planning. We have special guest Joe Rivera, who is a disaster restoration professional. He's been in the industry for over 35 years, and he is an amazing guy. He's going to be giving us some awesome tips today. So grab a pen and paper, listen up. Joe, will you explain for our audience who you are, why they should listen to you if they are business owners in the Pacific Northwest or really anywhere around the U.S. right now?
Okay, well, as Sarah mentioned, I've been in the disaster restoration business for over 35 years. I have a variety of business experience, not just with service and restoration, but I've worked in retail. I am a licensed insurance agent. I'm an artist. I own an art gallery. So I understand business in a variety of different ways. My first job, I worked in a restaurant. So, you know, I've been around the business community for many years. I know very many other entrepreneurs, interact with them on a daily basis. And I've always had a strong interest in disaster work, disaster preparedness. I had a vision when I was young that's always stuck with me. It was a dream I had one time of a major disaster occurring and everyone running from this disaster and no one really knowing where to go.
Wow.
It's always stuck with me. And it's kind of inspired me to kind of be inquisitive and learn more and more about disaster preparedness and that sort of thing. You know, a lot of people in our industry travel around the country chasing hurricanes and tornadoes and working in disaster scenes. I was always a dad and wanted to be at home, but I've always been exposed to the information and material on how to deal with those types of things. And so my role has been more to prepare locally, and I'm actually working with the emergency manager and local counties here to help them to improve their disaster preparedness and that sort of thing as well. So it's just something I really like doing.
Sure. Now, before we got started, you mentioned something to me about it's not so much a matter of if, but when. Could you explain that for our guys here?
Yes. Well, you know, this 2020 is probably a good example of that. You know,
no kidding.
for many years, pandemic has always been on the list of potential disasters that could occur. And I don't know that anyone, I didn't really take it that seriously. One of my specialties in disaster restoration is bioremediation or biohazard cleanup. So COVID-19 to us is kind of like, well, so what, you know, but, sure.
but not for most business owners, right?
Most business owners, not the way it's being, not the way that the measures are being implemented, very devastating to certain types of businesses and to our entire economy right now. So anyway, but again, the point is, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. There's a long list of different things that could happen. In the Pacific Northwest, we're in the Cascadia subduction zone, which means that there's a big fault right off the, about 15 miles off the coast here in Oregon, goes from California to Canada. And it's a subduction fault, which means that the plates, one goes under the other, and it builds up pressure over hundreds of years, and then all releases all at once. It's usually a 9.0 or greater magnitude earthquake. It's expected to hit the Northwest, could hit any time. It's expected to hit within the next couple hundred years, could be tomorrow, could be 100 years from now.
Wow.
So, you know, I mean, preparedness is something we all have to look at. And it is going to, obviously, that subduction zone is going to move someday. So it's not a matter of if, it is a matter of when. Same goes for a variety of other things. So, and that's why we have insurance. You know, one of the most likely scenarios is a home fire in the Northwest, which is why we're required to have fire insurance. It's very common, unfortunately. Relatively. You may never experience a home fire. Well, don't. But it is the most likely disaster experience in the Northwest. And a statistic in terms of this is that 80% of businesses that experience a disaster will fail within 5 years, even if they have insurance. This has been a statistic in the disaster management industry for many years, and that's due to a lack of a plan.
And yeah, I was going to say, what do you feel accounts for that? Like, why do we just hit a brick wall the moment we have a disaster?
Well, you know, the power goes out, for instance, okay? Or we're very reliant upon electricity, computers, this and that. If you don't have a backup generator, you're out of business for a while.
Yeah, good point. And from my experience dealing with, as a business coach with, looking at businesses' financials all the time, I've noticed a lot of small business owners do not have a big reserve, right? So if you have to close your doors for a week and it's not a national disaster where there's PPP money coming, if it's just a personal disaster, like you said, you know, the burning of your building or something like that, there isn't a big cushion for most small business owners, right? I think that's part of the planning is financial planning as well.
Absolutely. But on the other side of that, though, for example, there's a story I like to tell about the San Francisco 1906 earthquake.
Mm.
The earthquake came, and there was a little bank in San Francisco at the time called the Bank of Italy.
Hmm.
And obviously, they had some investors that helped them to weather that storm. And the Bank of Italy refinanced, you know, the building of San Francisco after that earthquake, and became the Bank of America.
Wow!
If you're prepared when a disaster comes, you can flourish and prosper. If you're not prepared, the other side of it is you can completely go out of business. It's an opponent to anyone's business life. And
so you were going to share for us today, I think, 4 steps. Is that right? For basic disaster preparedness planning, no matter what the disaster is, which I think we all need to hear a little bit about that right now with 2021. We've got what's going on in DC. We've got COVID isn't going away, right? We've got a lot of things to face. How can we be prepared? Give us these 4 tips of yours. I'm ready.
Okay. Well, you know, there's 4 steps to any disaster management plan. Okay. And the first step is establish a planning team. The second step is analyze your capabilities and what the hazards are. Third step is develop the plan based upon that. And fourth, and not least, is implement the plan. Okay.
Sure.
So now, to give some examples of how this could be, and first of all, let me back up just a little bit. I'll tell one other story about a little a little town in Denver that had a dam fail up river, and a flood came through. And it was an amazing story. I was reading the article on this. There was a gentleman that was, that when the river broke and this wall of water coming down, it uplifted this bridge up off the river. And he had the bridges coming down with the river, and it lodged between a tree and a hill and diverted the water from his house in another direction.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Okay. So he was the survivor of this thing, but he said that you know, the National Guard came, they surrounded the town. They didn't let anyone in or out without checking them and this sort of thing. And that little town, there was a little grocer in town, and he had a backup generator, and he could continue to supply the town with food and toilet paper.
Yeah. And stuff. These little things we take for granted.
And because of him, that was a manageable experience for the people in that town. They just thought the world of him and his preparedness. Okay. And that's how a lot of our businesses, the small business community is what will make or break the population in a situation like that.
Oh, okay? Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, we all have services that we offer, and if we're prepared, we can continue to deliver. Part of it is establishing a planning team. You got to put that hat on. Okay. You got to say, okay, you got to set aside a little time to be the disaster planner. And then you got to, the next step is step two, as I mentioned, was analyze capabilities and hazards. You got to figure out, well, what are the possible hazards in my area? Okay. Now, again, the Red Cross has a very helpful website. No matter where you are in the country, you can look up on the Red Cross, and they can tell you what they consider to be the most likely hazards are in your area.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay. That sounds really useful as a resource.
Yes. They'll also give you checklists on how to handle it. And you can do your own research. Okay. Once you establish what the hazard is, what are the capabilities of that hazard? What's going to happen from that? And what
Hey guys, head over to Red Cross, go get that checklist.
you want to look at what can happen from this, is that from the hazard you're talking about, what your organization's capabilities are, what your personal family's capabilities are to deal with that. What are your employees' capabilities? What are your suppliers? You may have vital suppliers to continue to produce your service to the public. Are these suppliers prepared for this sort of thing?
This seems like a good time to network, right? Let's create some kind of neighborhood community, or, you know, network of some kind between you and your vendors, you and your suppliers, because like you pointed out, I mean, even if you have a generator, if there's no gasoline to put in it, it's not going to last you very long.
Exactly. So you've got to find that location. Now, I did a survey of my local area, found that within a 50-mile radius, there was only one gas station that had a backup generator.
Wow.
And honestly, large chains, and now see, large vendors like Safeway, you know, they're publicly traded. They have a responsibility. They have a legal responsibility to have a disaster plan.
Mm.
And I found that Safeways have a backup generator.
That's another good thing to know going into 2021.
true, but the only thing is that I went to Safeway to find out, well, what was their plan in the event of a major disaster, like a large power outage or something like that, and their plan was to shut down.
I mean, I can see how that benefits them, but I'm not sure that's really helpful for small business owners or the community. If Safeway's shut down and they're not delivering anything with their backup generator.
Yeah, so they have a backup generator. It works off, their backup generators run on natural gas. In event of earthquake, that's going to be useless. Okay.
Right.
But in event of a short-term power outage, Safeways may continue to operate, or they may at least keep their food cold for a few days to see if they can weather that storm. But these large public companies, you know, they're looking out for the shareholders, not necessarily for the general public.
Mm.
It's really the small business community that needs to tie together to be prepared for something that may be coming, and help the community and themselves to flourish in that situation, because they can. Once you've established what the capabilities and hazards are, what are the likely disasters, what are your capabilities for dealing with them, and you've done your research, then you can draw a plan for each one of those types of disasters. Then you can implement the things that in your plan, such as getting a backup generator, learning how to hook it up, or getting it hooked up, or you know, you do step by step, and you repair things. Now, I'll give you an example of how this, how these four steps could be operatable. Okay.
Okay.
Sounds good. A very simple example would be a home fire. Okay.
Right.
It's the most disaster that anyone in the Northwest is going to face, probably anyone in the nation. So, you know, and that was from a survey. I went to the Red Cross website and I researched what the statistics were outside of that website as well to establish that, okay, yes, a home fire is the most likely disaster in my zone, certainly. Obviously, I have insurance for that, but not everybody does. If you own a property outright, right, or whatever, you may have skimped on insurance. And I would say that's probably not very good planning unless you're so financially well matter to you, because it is the most likely disaster. At least have that fire insurance on that property.
Sure.
Red Cross had checklists and materials on how a fire, how to prepare for a fire. I discovered that if a fire occurs in the middle of the night, that smoke inhalation could kill family members before they awoke. So smoke alarms are a must.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Isn't that a legal requirement, though? I believe it is.
Probably is.
But there's no one inspecting your home to make sure, unless you happen to be selling your home this year.
Well, yeah, and the thing is that, you know, you have to have a smoke alarm, but it doesn't have to be hardwired, which means that if you're not checking that battery, okay, depending upon the type of battery, type of smoke alarm, the rule is you should be checking those smoke alarms, testing them every 6 months. And the way you do that, whenever you change daylight savings time, you check your smoke alarms. So,
that's a good rule. Good rule of thumb.
Okay, right. These are all, you know, little tips and things. Okay. The other thing is fire extinguishers. You know, you want to have fire extinguishers near the kitchen and other areas where you could potentially have a fire. And you want to know how to use those fire extinguishers. You don't want to be reading up on it while the fire is going on.
I think that brings to mind too, as a business, because a lot of what you're saying applies not only in a home, but also in a small business. Like, do some kind of drilling session or disaster preparedness planning session with your employees. Get them in a room, hand them a fire extinguisher and let them put something out, you know, or I don't know, pretend like something's a fire.
Sure. You want to do the research. Well, what's a fire extinguisher for? It's fire extinguishers for extinguishing a little fire that just gets going. It's not going to put out a big fire. If you're going to use a fire extinguisher, this is all part of the plan. This is what you research, this is what you find out. You always, when you're using a fire extinguisher, you need to know you have an escape route going out the back side. Okay.
Okay.
You're putting out that fire, but if it doesn't work, if you're not able to put it out, you point at the base of the fire, not the flame, at the base, and you go back and forth with it. You just run that extinguisher till it's dead.
Yeah.
And if you don't put out that fire, you go out the back door. And if anybody else is going out the back door, they should be calling 911 on the way out the back door. Okay.
Right.
Okay. Now you want to determine the home, the business, whatever. But I was doing this for my home. We're a one level home, so we don't have a second story. Now every bedroom, the door should be closed at night. Okay. Because when those smoke alarms go off, I mean, you don't want to have your bedroom door open. You don't want that smoke to affect you in your sleep before you ever wake up. It's safest to have the door closed, okay? If the smoke alarm goes off, you hit the ground and you crawl over to the door and you put your back hand up against that door, okay? And if that door's hot, you don't open the door.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, yeah. You're at the base of the door. The heat from the base of the door to the top, I mean, you could be talking, I mean, it can literally be 1,000 degrees at the top here, okay? I mean, okay?
Whoo, that is so scary.
We're talking heat, baby, okay?
Fire
multiplies in size every, I forget how many seconds, okay? Fire's doubling in size, okay? So once it has the capability of doing that. So you hear the smoke alarm go off, you feel the door. If the door is cold, crack it open slowly. Maybe you can still extinguish this fire. Maybe you can unplug the thing. You know, maybe you can still take action. So check.
Yeah.
Very little smoke. Okay. Stay down. See what you can do. Okay. But if there's a lot of smoke, close the door and you're going out the window.
Okay? Yeah. First, right.
You want to drill this. You want to make sure those windows open.
Okay? Yeah, like drill your children, drill your employees, yeah. Drill anyone who's dependent upon you or for whom you are responsible, making sure that they know what to do. And not only do they know what to do, but they know what to do so well that when they're half asleep or scared or just came back from partying, they're still going to remember what to do. Because disasters usually strike at the moment you want them the least, right? Good old Murphy's after us.
Absolutely. Now, mm-hmm. I personally, on a personal level, know of three home fires within the last decade. Two of them happened to acquaintances of mine on a firsthand basis. They had the fire. One occurred to a friend of a friend. Okay. In two of those three fires, there were fatalities.
Okay? Oh, my goodness.
I mean, and that's just me. That's within my closest circle, once removed. Okay.
Yeah.
So this is real. Smoke alarms, the procedure. Now, in one of these instances, on one of the fatalities, there were three people in the home. Two of them died. And the woman that survived had to jump out of the second story window and broke her back when she hit the ground. Okay.
Wow. So, yeah. So having a plan in place. Now, So that's fire. Let's talk for a minute about the other kinds of disasters that can strike a business, right? We've talked about fire. We've talked about, obviously, pandemic. And then we just have the man-made disasters that are happening this past year, right? In places like Portland and places like New York City, where there's been a lot of rioting and chaos. How can a business owner prepare for things like that?
You touched upon my next little thing here, which is, now you won't find this on Red Cross. I did my own research on this. It was just kind of like, I caught a little statistic and I kind of started researching that and pulling that back and looking at stuff. And what I found was that there was another family disaster that's the most likely thing to be experienced in the Northwest, right next to, but actually equal to, statistically, a home fire.
Really?
Yes. That's an armed home invasion.
Wow. That's hard to believe, but this past year, I guess I should expect it.
Well, that happens as often as a home fire, believe it or not.
And wow.
It doesn't get the publicity that it should get. And the Red Cross hasn't picked up on it, but in my
they focus, I think, on natural disaster, right? Well, so
yeah,
nothing against Red Cross.
Nothing against Red Cross. It's just I found this to be a situation, and you know, the thing is, you know, armed invasion or invasion with weaponry and that sort of thing is another thing that businesses have experienced from been occurring, and so similar type of protective mechanisms should be put in place for this type of thing. So I did a disaster plan on that particular type of disaster also. So I just kind of relay some of the things I found with that. So, you know, we have to look what the capabilities are. I mean, how does a home invasion work? Typically, the way a home invasion works is you usually have two individuals working together, two perpetrators working together. Usually they're both armed. And the method that's most statistically most often encountered is they kick in the front door, and this is either in the middle of the night or right during dinner. I mean, this occurs in the evening time. Okay.
Wow. what a weird thing.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. Apparently these are not burglars. Okay. We're not talking about burglary here. We're talking about crazies that come in, kick in the front door, rob whatever they feel like taking, and then leave. This is the typical method of operation of an armed home invasion. Believe it or not, this is what.
That's insane.
Okay. So now in the middle of the night, another method besides the front door is if you have a glass door, it's very easy to penetrate a glass door.
Sure.
You wouldn't believe it. They just poke a hole in it and then they just push on, the whole thing shatters to the ground. You'd be surprised how little sense it actually makes. Okay.
Wow.
Now, getting back to my, you know, I told you earlier that, you know, I'd known of three home fires within immediate friends. And just in the last 6 months, I know of a friend of mine. She was a dance instructor, and she was a young single girl, rooming with five other girls, and they experienced an armed home invasion just a few months ago. Okay.
Wow.
Crazy. I mean, just like I say, just within my inner circle, these statistics are panning out. Anyway.
So what do we do about it? What can we do to prepare for that?
Talk about deterrence. Okay. First of all, well-lit alarmed properties with cameras. Okay. So it's known for burglary, any type of crime. Criminals usually will go after the easy hits. Okay. They're not going to, if you have a well-lit place with cameras, obviously, and an alarm system, they're probably not going to pick that one, you know?
Yeah, okay? Sure.
So the more security you put in place, the more obvious it is that it's going to be hard for them to get away with it, the less likely it is. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there's hardware that's designed to make kicking in an exterior door nearly impossible or require persistence, which would completely eliminate any element of surprise. Okay.
Yeah. Wow.
There's hardware you can buy that for your front door, and I would put any exterior facing door that a perpetrator could come in, that they would be kicking on that thing for a half an hour and not get through, not penetrating.
And that sounds good to me, because it takes me about that long to wake up. But that could be used even for a business. If you have a front-facing business store, similar things probably could be used.
Invest a little money in making it very, very difficult for them to penetrate, okay?
Right.
All right. There's window film, a clear film that can be placed on windows now that also make penetration of glass very, very difficult and take a lot of time. And this is clear; you can't really see it. And if they try to puncture through your rear sliding glass door if you have one. They're going to be bashing on it with a bat for a while before they get through it. Okay.
Good.
Which can alert you. And you know, if you have an alarm, you know, and that alarm starts sounding and the lights come on and there's cameras, just, you know, you're going to make it so that these guys aren't going to pull.
Bye-bye. Okay. Right. Yeah.
Now with all those, if all those deterrents fail and even including all with all these deterrents in place, I really wanted to take it to the next level because many experts recommend firearm training and gear.
Mm.
Okay.
Okay.
It's not enough just to buy a gun. You know, you really want to know how to use the weapon and how to defend yourself. That too.
Yeah, I heard that. I don't remember what the percentage was, but there was a significant number of Americans who were first-time firearm purchase in 2020, which makes sense because there was a lot of what you're describing going on. I think people felt very unsafe, but you're right. A gun, if you are of the mindset that that's the direction you want to go is to purchase one, it doesn't do you any good unless you know how to fire it and how to fire it without A, putting it through a wall, which then maybe there's someone you care about on the other side of that wall, or putting it through, you know, the person's shoulder when that's not going to stop them. Like you have to be able to aim hit what you're aiming at.
Yes. Well, you know, there's an organization called Front Sight Firearms Training Institute that I highly recommend. And the training they provide there gives intensive training on the use of weaponry for self-defense. They also cover, also learned about first aid in that type of a situation, which could save them. In that kind of a scenario, if you know what to do, it's not that difficult, then you can save a life until the first responders get there. Also touched upon the legal aspects of self-defense using firearms, which is very important to understand the legal ramifications, what you can and can't do, and how important it is.
That's very vital.
Yeah, there's also insurance coverage for this type of thing specifically, which I believe you should get and put in place. That particular institute also has an extension course on the Constitution and constitutional rights with respect to that, and constitutional rights in general, which will also help during this pandemic situation.
Sure. Good point. Are there any last tips you'd like to share with our listeners? And what actions, because this is a 5-day challenge, we want to give them challenge homework to do today. What actions do you suggest that they take today that could maybe take maybe 10 minutes, 10, 15 minutes for them to get that first step done?
Well, you know, if I were going to have just a short bit, I would at least touch upon these two disasters I've talked about. Do their own research, get those two together. Those are the two most likely things you're going to experience. You know, there are other disasters coming down the line. Use the Red Cross list, look it over. There's wildfires, which this year was a big deal.
Yeah.
On what area you live in, that could be a scenario. I have a list here of things you want to consider. If there's a major disaster, you want to consider medical issues, security issues, food, water, sanitation, legal communications.
Yeah.
There's areas of research. This Red Cross, you know, I went in there today, and these guys, the disaster preparedness community is constantly putting out new stuff. The Red Cross, now they have these apps you can download. A first aid app that tells you how to handle different situations. You can have it right on your phone.
Cool.
An earthquake app, flood app, wildfire app. It just kind of gives you a little blurb on exactly what to do in what situations. Have a kit. You never know what's going to happen. Prepare for evacuation from your home if necessary. Have backpack stuff ready to go. Have something in your car if you get stranded somewhere, if the bridges go out because of an earthquake, and you have gear in your car that can get you home. It might be a long walk, but if you have
stuff, but at least you'd make it. That's a good point.
The last thing I'll leave you with is something I learned in a book I read about on disaster preparedness. Is the best way to approach it, do something every day. Do one thing. Do at least one thing every day. Study something. Do something towards preparedness every day.
Yeah.
And hopefully you'll be ready when the time comes.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Joe. I feel like you gave us so much value today. I really, really appreciate you coming on the show. And I think you have been an enormous value to all the business owners who are going to watch this. So thank you very much. And will you tell our audience how they can reach out to you if they're in the Pacific Northwest? They want a little bit more information about disaster planning, or if they, you know, God forbid, have a fire or water damage and they want to reach out to your company to come take care of it, how can they reach you?
Well, we've got a website. I think you've got the little website scrolling along the
there it is down there. Yep.
Reach me on the website.
Good.
Yeah, that's the best way.
Cool. All right. Thank you, Joe. We'll talk to you next time.
Thank you.